and I accidentally replied, "No, thank you," when a cashier wished me a good day. Not buying that gorgeous black chiffon dress when it was in a half-price sale. My 26th birthday, my first big night out since my breakup with Henry, when I tried to cure my broken heart with poison and singed off half my eyebrow doing a flaming sambuca. Is it possible that none of that has happened yet? That it's been wiped clean from my history? Then so too would be the real mistakes that haunt me. The ones I never let myself think about because I know I'll get stomach knots and want to bury myself in a shallow grave. No regrets. That's what I always tell myself when I get in my head about the way life has turned out. I even set those words as my laptop password. But it's a total lie. How could I not come to regret the years I wasted starting, maintaining, and holding together a restaurant that I should have known was doomed to fail? The sacrifices I made, the risks I took, the promises I broke, the people I hurt, trying to keep it going. How many nights I've lain in bed, wishing I could change things, fix my messes, unbreak hearts, especially my own. And now, it never happened. There is no way a few crystals and a whole lot of wine could make me time travel, is there? I'm going to wake up any minute on my cold kitchen floor under a blood-red moon with a bump on my head and a foggy memory of a strange, lucid dream. I let out an exasperated sigh so loud that the woman next to me passive-aggressively asks me to stop breathing on her. "I'm having a hell of a morning," I tell her. She looks uninterested, turning her attention back to her phone. If this was a dream, how would I wake up? When I'm in the middle of a bad dream, I can always rouse myself. I squeeze my dream eyes closed and focus really hard, like I'm forcing my brain to realign with reality. I try it now. Nothing happens. I need a disruptor, something to jolt me. "Can you pinch me?" I ask the woman. I want to be sure I'm not suffering from some type of hallucination. She looks horrified, naturally, but she's a figment of my imagination. She'll forgive me. I roll up my sleeve. She stares at my forearm with disgust. "Or slap me?" "Yeah, slap me." I tap my cheek. "Right here. I won't be mad, I promise." The woman leans away before standing and walking to the other side of the carriage, mumbling something under her breath about driving next time. When I step off the train at Winchester, I'm a bag of nerves and confusion. If this really is my 25th birthday, then what should I do? Cake. Cake is always a good answer. I duck into the little coffee shop attached to the station. It's busy, filled with commuters in power suits waiting for the delayed train to London Waterloo. And while I do consider asking one of them to slap me too, they all look pissed off enough to oblige, I decide I've had enough strange looks to last a lifetime, and instead order a red velvet cupcake, paying for it with a crumpled £5 note I find at the bottom of my purse. I take a seat in the corner. There's only one person who can help me. One person who won't judge me or question my sanity. Who won't lean back with sceptical eyes, secretly googling emergency psychotherapist numbers under the table as I talk. Dottie. I need to find out for myself that she's okay. And if her crystals are, in fact, secret gems to open a time-travelling portal. Hearing this thought go through my mind makes me realise I might also need to see a head trauma specialist, just in case. I find a number for Dottie in my phone, a mobile she got rid of years ago now, replaced with the switchboard number at the assisted living home. I'm convinced she's not going to answer, that I'll end up speaking to some grumpy man who'll tell me I've got the wrong number. But when the ringing stops, and she answers with a sprightly, "Happy birthday to my favourite granddaughter," I feel like I've hit the drop on a roller coaster. "Dottie," I say through a fraught sob. She sounds happy, healthy, herself. "Now isn't the best time, darling. Coco is mid-aura smudge, getting right to the nitty-gritty of it." "It's just, I wanted..." I take a long, deep breath. "How are you?" "Fabulous, sweetheart. Oh, my heart is still beating. The sun is shining. What is there to complain about?" she replies. I smile at her enthusiasm. There she is, I think. The woman I remember, who's been slowly slipping away from me, fading into the shadows. Everything okay? She asks, as if she can sense my trepidation. I'm having a bad day. I wanted to hear your voice. I'll leave you in peace, I say. A bad day is better than no day at all. I can hear her smile. Come see me tomorrow. I'll cheer you up with a casserole. At the bungalow? I ask, a sort of test. Where else would I be? My chest deflates in relief? More confusion? Dottie is at the bungalow. Not in that tiny bedroom with a red emergency pull cord and a leather chair perfectly imprinted with the shape of my bum. This is unfathomably surreal. But with every passing hour, I'm starting to believe that this is, in fact, really happening. I make plans to visit her the next day. One more thing before you go, I say. Your crystals, they're not... They're just crystals, right? They're not supposed to be magic or... I don't even know where I'm going with this. Well, everything's magic if you believe in it, Dottie replies. A typical answer for the woman who claims tarot readings are as important as trips to the dentist. In the background of the call, I hear a strange grunting noise, some straining. I've got to go, Grace. Coco has found a pocket of bad energy. Looks like a toughie. With that, the line goes dead. I sit back, watching the world of the coffee shop move around me. I look at the people, minding their business, impervious to the fact that I might have done the impossible. Travelled through time. My attention snags on a scruffy-looking guy scrolling on his laptop. The gloomy headlines of the day flash and go. Surely there was a better candidate for this magical golden ticket I'd been given. Someone who could instigate world peace, who could cure cancer, fix global warming. I can barely fix my own life, let alone save the world. A familiar anxiety swells in my chest, the feeling I spend so much of my days fighting, that I'm out of my depth, that my convictions are without courage, that eventually I'll mess this chance up, the way I mess everything up. Then Dottie's natural enthusiasm echoes in me. A bad day is better than no day. She's right. This day is happening, whether I like it or not. I can either hide out in the train station coffee shop, or I can get on with it. There are only two things I remember about this day from the first time around, and the first one is meeting Henry. But every time I think about that moment, I feel like someone is standing on all my pressure points in sharp heels. Thankfully, the second memory is far simpler. Me in my kitchen, pesto in my hair, pigs with no blankets, fussing over whether my handmade pastry for the mini pies is crisping up enough in the oven. That cook was one of the most stressful experiences of my life, and ultimately, a total waste of time. I might not yet know how to fix my future, but I know how to fix this. I stop at a supermarket on the way home, and instead of spending a fortune on fancy delicacies, I buy enough to make a simple spread of sandwiches and crisps. It'll be basic, and the Grace of 5 years ago wouldn't be caught dead showing up to a client's house with the type of food you'd serve at a child's birthday party. But Grace today knows better. I know that to spend hours making every item of food from scratch is a fool's errand. I know that every person at that party will be so drunk they won't care what the food is. Only that it's edible. Every person except for Henry, that is. I spend the rest of my afternoon stress cleaning my house, and when Sasha comes home in her typical whirlwind fashion, she blares music from her bedroom while she changes, then meets me at the door as Roman pulls up. Still the mellowest guy I've ever known, but he looks so much younger. Sporting a goatee, he'll come to regret. His smile, when Sasha walks out, all dressed up, is as wide as it always was. I calculate they've been together a couple of years at this point, and he's still besotted with her. Opening the car door, holding her hand when he should be keeping his on the wheel, telling her how beautiful she looks. In 5 years' time, this will have evolved into something so strong and pure. It's the only proof my burned, bitter heart has that true love exists. We park outside Henry and Ali's place, a small brick terraced house on the edge of Winchester city centre. Sasha begins telling me things I know already. That Ali moved down south from Newcastle a few weeks ago, that she's staying in her friend Henry's spare room until she passes her probation at the law firm and gets her own place. My heart is pounding as Roman leads us along the garden path. All three of us have a tray in each hand, which makes it impossible for me to tug down the hemline of the tight black dress I swear wasn't this short last time around. You can hear the bass line of loud music from down the street. I stare at the blue front door. Technicolor memories flood my vision. Some of the biggest moments of my life happen behind that door. Well, they will.
Are you all right? Sasha asks. You look a little out of it.
Yeah, I'm feeling... I look at the door again. I shouldn't be here. I should be in a brain scanner, a psychologist's chair. Surely this can't be real. Is this about Jason? Jason who? Is my first thought. Then it dawns on me that 5 years ago, Jason Cleves was a huge part of my life. Why would this be about Jason? I ask, hoping she'll jog my faded memory. Her perfect eyebrows scrunch in disbelief. Possibly because you were supposed to be on a birthday trip to Paris with him right now, but you're not because he cheated on you with Hannah, I say. God, it's been so long since I even thought of all that drama that saying it feels like rereading a long-forgotten childhood diary. Jason and I had been together almost 6 months. It was never that serious, and if it weren't for the birthday trip that I'd planned, we'd have had nothing to officially tie us together. The relationship probably should have fizzled out after a few weeks of fun. We were never really that compatible. But because everyone around us was in a relationship, we slipped into an easy flow. We had the same taste in films. I loved to cook and he loved to eat. And he was the first man I'd been with who actually knew how to give a woman an orgasm. I thought that was enough. Thought that sparks were for fairy tales and bonfire night. That love was as generic as a printed greeting card message. Until I met Henry and learned that real love turns your soul inside out. But that doesn't mean it didn't devastate me when I discovered a string of dirty messages and pictures on Jason's phone from a female colleague he assured me I had no reason to be concerned about. It hurt. Right, Sasha says. As far as she knows, I'm heartbroken. So if you want to drop the food off and go home, I understand. I thought it would help take your mind off things, but maybe it's too much too soon. Feel free to tell me if I'm being an overbearing knob. You're never overbearing or a knob, I tell her, as Roman knocks on the front door, and I get a wave of anxiety so fierce it threatens to buckle my knees. I need a drink, that's all. I want to be here, with you. Roman coughs. And Rome, I add. So sweet of you to say, G, he teases. Sasha loops her arm through mine as we walk the last few steps to the front door. Ali's lovely. This is going to be so much fun. Who knows, you might even meet someone tonight. I say. There's no might about it. The front door opens and it's Ali, a face I haven't seen in years. Long golden blonde hair, big brown eyes, gorgeous cherub-like cheeks. She smiles and hugs Sasha and they share a joke about something that happened at work that afternoon. And then Sasha introduces us.
It's so nice to meet you. I've heard such great things about your cooking, Ali says.
I'm utterly lost for words. The last time we spoke, it was anything but pleasant. But as she pulls me in for a hug, it all feels like ancient history.
And happy birthday, I hear, she says.
Oh, yeah, it is. I give a dismissive wave. Can you believe she wanted to spend it at home watching Christmas films? Sasha rolls her eyes. Ali gives me a puzzled but still friendly look.
Christmas films in January?
The Holiday, I say. It's my favourite film.
I'll watch it any time.
Oh, really? I've never seen it.
You'll have to come over sometime with Sasha. Show me what the fuss is about. I know instantly that it will never happen.
Ali takes the trays of food from us and gushes about how much effort I must have gone to, which is almost none in comparison to the feast I prepared the first time. I made so much food, and I spent over an hour faffing with the finishing touches in her kitchen. Tonight, though, Ali places the trays on the counter, removes the cling film, pays me, and that's it. Job done. I follow the three of them into the living room. It's dark, boisterous, and hot. Exactly like I remembered it. We lose Ali in the chaos of shoulder-to-shoulder bodies. And then I'm third-wheeling, the filling in a Sasha and Roman sandwich. The music is far too loud for a house with neighbours, and the bar lining the back wall is an old decorator's table with a cheap plastic cover on top. All the spirits are open with sticky lids. The soda is flat. Ice? What ice? It's the type of party you live for at 25, waking up with a groggy memory of one of the best nights of your life. But now that I'm 30, unofficially, I'm huffing every time someone barges past me to get to the little garden. I'm complaining about the lingering cigarette smoke stinging my eyes. I'm wincing at the plastic cups with lipstick stains. Or worse.
What a party, Sasha is saying, beginning to dance. Such a good turnout.
If I'm going to get through this, I need an open mind. What would 25-year-old Grace do? I pour myself a warm white wine and drink it in seconds.
Damn, Roman says, sipping his sparkling water. Shotgun not carrying this one to the car later.
Sasha watches me with concern in her eyes as I pour myself another glass.
I'll make this one last, I say.
Roman talks about his day at work, yelling over the music as he explains how excited he is for a brand new book he's going to be launching this year, Out of Nothing, a memoir from a young woman who spent a month lost in the Australian outback. It's a tale about trusting your instincts as much as it is survival. It was on the bestseller list for years.
Oh my God, I gasp as soon as he drops the title. That is such an incredible book. I read it cover to cover in one sitting. I loved it so, so much.
Roman blinks at me.
You... what? He says. No, Grace, you couldn't have read it, because it hasn't even been printed yet. Foot, mouth, replace with wine. I mean, I love the sound of it. I read something else, obviously. Books. You've read one. You've read them all. Am I right?
I twist the wine bottle and inspect the label, laughing nervously.
Wow, what is in this stuff?
Slow, bewildered smiles spread across both their lips.
That would be alcohol, Roman says, raising his water, a proud designated driver.
I laugh again, feeling heat pinch my cheeks as I try to sever the link between my brain and my voice. This is so much harder than I thought it would be. I glance over my shoulder, both wanting to see Henry and not wanting to see him. I met him in the kitchen last time while I was having a huge freakout over the food. But if I'm not in there to meet him, how is any of this going to play out? I've already changed so much about today. I don't have time to consider it because, right on cue, Henry appears through a gap in the improvised dance floor. He's got a stunning redhead woman next to him, talking into his ear. He laughs, then stops at the bar next to me and pours her a drink. He opens a bottle of beer. I can't stop staring. All sense of subtlety is lost on me. He's wearing the same tight black shirt he wore before, the same tired look in his eye. I'm analysing every inch of him like a game of spot the difference, and he casts me a sideways glance as if he feels the intensity of it. Our eyes connect, a shade of green so stunning it makes my stomach flip. Yesterday, on the escalator, his eyes were filled with emotion. Now, there's nothing there at all. With a blink, the entire room melts away, and it's just the two of us. Alone in this living room, almost a year from now, where it all went wrong. I see things I can never unsee, say words I can never take back, and then I feel it all over again, my chest heaving out painful breaths. He was so cruel. So was I. But there's no way to repair that. There's no forgiveness to be earned, because none of it has happened yet. Our battleships are lifeless at the bottom of the ocean, but I'm the only one who knows they're there. A loud cheer rips through the room, snapping me back to the moment. A group of Sasha's lawyer colleagues, in relaxed clothes, play beer pong next to us. A stocky guy in a blue baseball cap lines up to take a winning shot. His throw is terrible, the ball whipping from the edge of the dining table to the wall, then back to him. He lurches like a tennis player, arms stretched out to catch it. But Sasha, Roman and I are right in his way. The ball flies over us, baseball cap guy following, knocking the redhead's drink out of her hand before landing at our feet, his shoulder bashing into the base of the bookshelf. I watch in slow motion as a ceramic lamp wobbles, left, right, then plummets towards the floor, right into Henry's palm. Henry's landed on the carpet with a thump, catching the lamp by a whisper. Everyone celebrates. He lifts it back to its spot on the shelf, patting baseball cap guy on the shoulder, politely telling him to be more careful. Last time around, that lamp was in pieces. I remember because in about 3 weeks' time, I'll help Henry glue it back together. But now I won't. I squeeze my eyes shut. Everything is changing. I feel it already. If I'd been in the kitchen like I was before, Henry would have fixed his drink and moved on. He wouldn't have been close enough to get to that lamp in time. It's the butterfly effect, the ripple of consequence. The redhead leaves to get more napkins for the spill, leaving Henry next to us.
Great save, Roman says to him.
Henry shrugs, sipping his drink.
Good timing, is all.
Roman introduces himself. They start chatting, reminding me how easy conversation with Henry is, how charming and personable he can be. Everybody loves him. So naturally, Sasha joins in, asking him what he does for work. Her impressed eyes when he tells them he's a nurse. My heart bursts with pride that's not mine to claim. Henry laughs at something Roman says, eyes flickering to me, the girl watching the scene unfold like a spectator. I'm next, I realise. I'm being looped in, included in the conversation. It's what polite people do, but I feel like a defenceless animal on a busy road, car tyres hurtling towards me. Oh God, it's happening. He's about to storm into my life, my heart, my history, my future. Hi, Henry says to me, a gorgeous smile on his face. I don't think we've met. I'm Henry. I could have lived this moment a million times before, and I still wouldn't be prepared for it. Henry holds out his hand, a little sliver of himself served up only for me, but I can't take it. The pain in my chest tells me that if I touch him, I will fall apart. When I broke up with Jason, I was a rom-com heroine crying into her cereal for a weekend. After Henry, I was desolate. Dried tears burning my cheeks, staring at walls, chest hollow, the kind of hurt time could never heal. But how the hell do I explain that to Roman and Sasha, who are staring at me as if I'm from another planet? Say hello to this perfectly nice person who's invited us into his home and given us all this free booze, Sasha's face tells me.
I...
Everyone is staring at me. I can't pretend I haven't loved him, haven't hated him. I have to pee, I finally say. I leave the three of them dumbfounded behind me, a distant murmur of Sasha's apologetic explanation that I've consumed a lot of wine ringing in my ears. I dart towards the little toilet by the front door and lock myself inside. I regret it instantly. It stinks in here. A thick, putrid smell, as if the sewer for the whole of Winchester is using this one toilet as an air vent. I hold my breath and sit on the edge of the closed plastic lid, elbows on my knees, face in my hands, wine heightening my emotions, confusion rising to the surface. I can hardly breathe, but anywhere is better than out there. I was starting to think this glitch was a blessing, but being here makes it feel like a curse, like I'm being forced to relive my hardest days all over again. All that heartache, times two. Because how else would things go? It's me. My only talent is screwing up. I stand up, slapping my thighs, forcing my mind to reboot, reframing. A little trick Rhonda taught me when we worked together, and I'd end up in a flap over a miscounted supplier order or a hygiene inspection I'd forgotten about. She'd take me by the hands, make me breathe deep and clear my mind. Then trust that every obstacle is surmountable, that I can do this, that it will all be okay. Picturing her beside me ramps my guilt up a notch, until I remember that here and now, there is no the lucky one. There's no bankruptcy. I haven't failed my entire staff. The man outside that door doesn't know me, or my faults, He's not hurt or pining or revengeful. He's not texting me in the middle of the night asking me to pick up the phone. He's a stranger. Maybe that's what he should stay. As soon as I think it, I start picturing all those old time travel movies. The warnings about changing too much. The unknown consequences of my actions. But anything has to be better than how it played out the first time around. I mean, it already worked out well for the ceramic lamp. I check my makeup in the mirror while giving myself a little pep talk. You can face this. Head out there, enjoy your birthday with your friends, one thing at a time. I stuff my lipstick back in my handbag, nodding at myself with certainty. Everything will be absolutely fine as long as you stay the hell away from Hen. I open the bathroom door, and there he is, standing right in front of me, a red plunger slung over his left shoulder, a shocked look on his face, which quickly transforms to a wince as the heinous smell of the bathroom wafts out behind me. Shit. Literally.
Chapter 5. Henry, 5 years earlier. The first time I met Grace Monroe, she rammed an entire tray of cream cheese hors d'oeuvres into my chest. "You are kidding me!" she shouted. Lumps of white decorated my black shirt. Olives rolled across the floor. We both watched as a tray clanged against the tiles. "Thank you for that. I didn't know anyone was in here," I said. My kitchen was a 1x2 space that lost a meter when the fridge door opened. No one wanted to spend a minute of the party in this shoebox, which is why I'd made a bar in the living room. The only reason I'd come in here was to try and salvage the jagged remains of my favourite lamp, the victim of a messy and very uncoordinated game of beer pong, and to hope there was something in here to start sobering up the masses. Ali, my longtime best friend and roommate of 5 weeks, had assured me this would be a small gathering for some of her new colleagues. But now my modest house was filled with lawyers who looked like they were offloading steam from a decade of continuous work. There was a couple wearing wedding rings, who I hope weren't married to other people, eating each other's faces on my stairs. Three people, nope, make that four, had spilled drinks on the cream carpet, and I was fairly sure the little white paper hanging out of the letterbox was a passive-aggressive noise complaint. Ali kept telling me to relax, to sink a few beers to loosen up, and in the thick of the chaos, I'd considered it. With an early start on the ward, and the knowledge that shutting off the decision-making part of my brain was rarely consequence-free, I decided to stick to the soft stuff. Tomorrow's me would be grateful. I moved to put the lamp shards aside, but quickly realised that was an impossible task. Every counter was covered with trays, the fancy stainless steel type you see suited waiters carrying at posh events. I couldn't see my microwave or kettle. I looked around at the absurd amount of food. Seemed Ali had gone overboard on catering too. "What the..." I said, inspecting it all. Gooey things in shot glasses with little tomatoes on top, asparagus wrapped in Parma ham, miniature steamed buns in every colour of the rainbow. I was about to ask if there was any food in here, but I think I have my answer, I joked, trying to lighten the mood as the stressed woman picked up the remaining food from the floor, squelchy filling oozing between her fingers. It landed in the bin with a slap. Then she turned to me, and I could see that to her, this was not a laughing matter. "This was a total waste of time," she wailed. "Who orders gourmet catering for a party like this?" "Exactly what I was thinking," I said. "I've spent 2 days preparing. It's cost more than these people are paying me, and I stupidly thought that might be a good move, that it might lead to more work at some point. I thought this was going to be a sophisticated wine mixer of networking lawyers. I had flyers printed especially. It's like a student dungeon out there. How is anyone supposed to see the handmade pastry roses I put on top of the pies when the only lighting is Technicolor UV? I spotted the tray she was referring to. Little circular short crust pies, golden brown. Impressive. "I can see them," I said. I might as well have turned up with 20 pizzas and saved myself the time and money. She flopped onto a stool and rubbed her temples. I wondered if she knew she was massaging cheese into her skin. Probably not the best time to mention it. I felt a little sympathy for this woman who clearly hated this party as much as I did, so I picked up a pie and shoved it in my mouth. "Oh, wow," I said when the flavours kicked in. Rosemary, thyme, really tender beef. "This is good." "Thanks," she said, still dejected. "I mean it," I swallowed and reached for a second. "What difference does it make? If anyone eats it and loves it, I doubt they'll remember by morning. Honestly, I feel like I'm the butt of a cruel joke. Who are these people?" I wiped the crumbs on my jeans, then held out my hand. "Henry, I live here. Nice to meet you." "You live with Ali?" The colour drained from her face. "You're the customer." I nodded. "Technically." "Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God." She flapped her arms, flicking blobs of food onto the ceiling. "Please forget I said any of that. That's so unprofessional of me. I'm happy. This is a wonderful opportunity. It's a total joy to be here and cater for you all tonight." I bit my lips to hold back the laughter. She paused, as if she thought I might be winding her up. "Seriously? You live here?" I wasn't sure if her surprise was that I lived with Ali or that I lived here. The house was a little drab, like all affordable rentals in the area, but I made the best of it. The furniture was mostly second-hand stuff I'd bought online, but I kept it in good condition. I learned some basic DIY from a guy I lived with years before, so I'd hung shelves and pictures, replaced the leaky showerhead, painted over the offensive shades of yellow. It wasn't the nicest house you'd ever see, but it was a good stopgap, especially as the rent was reasonable enough to allow me to pour a decent amount into my savings each month. Even more so now Ali had moved down south like I'd been nagging her to for years. Or maybe this was her roundabout way of asking if I was single. "Ali's my roommate," I said. "And if it makes you feel any better, I was also misled about what this party was going to be like. But hey, it's awesome food." I tucked into a mini Yorkshire pudding filled with beef and horseradish. "I'm happy you're here, even if you're not exactly happy to be here." A beat of silence. "Roommate," she repeated. The fact that's what she chose to focus on gave my ego a little kick. "We've been friends for years," I said. "Just friends?" Even with my eyes closed, I'd noticed the way she brazenly looked me up and down. "Like a sister," I confirmed. It always felt like a weird thing to claim when I didn't meet Ali in person until I was 18 and I barely knew any of the intricacies of her childhood. I couldn't tell you what food she refused to eat at 5, what toys she played with at 8, what the first boy who broke her heart was called. But it's familial, what we share. And I know she'd agree. We met online as kids. Some new scheme the government had launched to soften the hell their systems had put children in care like us through. And we spent our teenage years sending long, rambling messages back and forth, baffled at how we could possibly have so much in common. How despite living at opposite ends of the country, we'd been dealt the same blows, lived through the same shit. It was quiet in the kitchen, except for the muffled sound of some crappy pop music. We were a couple of feet apart, staring at each other. For a fleeting second, I thought of Naomi in the room next door. Ali had upheld her promise to set me up with her, and Naomi was nice. Red hair, big boobs, attractive. She was a meteorologist, and we both studied at Southampton University. The conversation was great, and if you'd asked me 10 minutes earlier, I'd have said she was a sure thing. That there was no way anyone else would grab my attention tonight, but that was before I met. "What's your name?" I asked.
"Grace. Grace the Caterer," I said. "Only my best friends get to call me that. I should be so lucky." Grace fought a smile and stood. "Well, thank you, Henry, for not being offended by my bitching. Feel free to..." She waved at the food. "Do what you need to do with this." "Wait, you're leaving?" I was surprised how much this bothered me. As much as I would love to spend my birthday watching the food I made turn stale, I think going home and sleeping away what's left of this day would be a more constructive use of my time. "Happy birthday." "Thank you." Grace finally smiled, and it was like that moment when you hear the first chord of a new song and instantly know you'll love it. Man, she was pretty, with fierce blue eyes and wild curly blonde hair that fell to her shoulders. She had a white streak of cream cheese across her cheek, hiding barely there freckles. Her little black dress could mess up even the most reliable of pacemakers, so I knew she wasn't only here for the food. I took my shot. "What if you stayed?" I leaned against the door, then remembered I'm 6'3" and blocking the only exit probably wouldn't put her at ease. I rested against the counter instead. "What if you stayed and we made something fun out of this crappy situation we found ourselves in?" "Why is it crappy for you?" "Because I have work at 7 a.m. and I know I'm about to lose a huge chunk of my security deposit due to the mess out there." Grace narrowed her eyes. "Why did you agree to host a party if you didn't want to?" she said. "Because Ali is incredibly persuasive. You could learn a thing or two." I laughed. "I'm trying my best here." "Sorry, go on." She knew she had me in the palm of her hand. I loved that confidence. I took a deep breath. "Don't mess this up, Henry." "As I was saying," I said, "what if we found a way to make sure tonight was worth it for at least one of us?" Grace glanced at the door as if she was contemplating her exit. Then she said, "How?" "I'll bet you I can clear every tray of food before the last person leaves." She rocked on her feet as she considered. "And if you can't?" "Then I will pay you back in full for all you've spent and eat every single morsel of leftover food myself." I knew I was going overboard for a woman I'd only met 5 minutes ago, and the last thing I wanted to do was take a chunk out of my savings, but I'd replace the sadness in Grace's eyes with something else. And I was dying to keep it that way. "You know that will likely be mountains of food, right?" "I thought there were going to be hundreds of people here." "That's breakfast, lunch, dinner, and midnight snacks sorted for the foreseeable. I hope I've got space in the freezer." She laughed, sweet and rough. Even better than I expected it to sound. "Fine." She handed me a tray full of cucumber chunks stuffed with some red mush. "You're on, Henry." I spent the next 4 hours circling the party, shoving food and her flies under everyone's noses while they gyrated and drank and drank. I was called a butler who should be in the buff by Naomi, a great help by Ali, and a waiter wanker by Ali's date, Marcus. But more importantly, every time I squeezed past her to get more trays, Grace called me her assistant, and anything that kept me in her orbit was worth the jibing. She was off duty, at my insistence, dancing with her friends, the swaying of her hips, the way her dress flicked up slowly, revealing more of her smooth thighs. It set my mind straight to the gutter. Usually, I wouldn't have thought twice about a subtle proposition. Grace wouldn't be the first girl I'd met and been in bed with before I knew her last name. But I held off. Something told me to play the long game. By 2 in the morning, the party had wound down. I peeled the last attendee, a very drunken woman in her 50s, from my sofa and into the back seat of her moody husband's Jaguar. I handed him a couple of carrier bags for the inevitable stomach pyrotechnics and wished him luck. Back inside, I sat myself at the dining table, fork in hand, firmly planning to hold up my end of the deal. When Grace's friends left around midnight, I assumed she'd leave with them, that she'd collect her catering things in the morning. Seemed Grace had other plans. "How's it looking?" she said, pulling up a chair next to me. I poured her the last of a bottle of white wine. 4 trays left. I grabbed a fork and stabbed a mozzarella ball. "Gonna be a busy few days." Grace laughed. "You don't need to do that. You already did enough tonight." "Bet's a bet," I said. She looked behind me, scanning the messy living room. Empty cans and bottles lined every surface. The carpet would need to be professionally cleaned. But I only saw her. "Has your roommate gone to bed?" she asked. I nodded. Her boyfriend Marcus was in a pretty bad way. Well, I think he's her boyfriend anyway. She only met him a couple of weeks ago, and I do not care to know the difference between dating and seeing and situationships. I can't keep up. You're either together or you're not. Straightforward. I like it. She ate a grape and laughed when I playfully admonished her for helping me. "What does he think of you two living together?" "Not a lot. Why would he?" The thought had never occurred to me before, but I could see how to fresh eyes it was slightly odd for 2 platonic friends to be living alone together at 25. I knew people from school with kids by now, and here I was living like I was still in uni. Besides, it's only temporary. Until she passes her probation at the firm, she didn't want to make a big commitment and sign a lease somewhere. "That makes sense. My friend Sasha told me how tough it can be. Once they had an associate walk out on day one, it was that brutal." "If this party was anything to go by, I can understand why. Can you believe Ali told me this would be a chilled out night? I mean, they were wild," I said. "Don't use the downstairs toilet, by the way. There's another upstairs." She thanked me for the warning. "Don't you think it would have been less hassle to hire a venue for this party?" She hooked a dirty sock from the table with her pinky finger and dropped it on the floor. "Or a farm." I laughed, biting into a simple-looking tomato thing. Unexpected flavours exploded in my mouth. Balsamic, herbs, and something sweet. Jesus, I bet this girl could make even buttered toast taste out of this world. "Where were you 3 weeks ago when this was being planned? You could have saved me a lot of heartache." She grimaced. "I was probably with my ex, who coincidentally did not save me a lot of heartache." I knew I should take from this that she was getting over someone important, but all I could hear was single, single, single. It dinged like a winning bell. "Everything happens for a reason," I said. "Big believer in that." "Like you running into the kitchen in search of food. If that hadn't happened, you never would have met me." "Oh, I assure you," I said, "I'd have found a way to meet you." Grace found my honest stare and blushed. "So fucking pretty. Can I have your phone number?" I asked. She hesitated. I pointed to the tray of food. To prove I held up my end of the bargain, of course. She scrunched her nose in regret. I don't give my number to strangers. I put down my fork. My name is Henry Aidan Dunn. I got my nursing degree from Southampton University. I failed my first year and had to retake it, which took a huge toll on my bank balance and my confidence. But thankfully, both recovered, and now I work in the cardiology department at Royal Hampshire County Hospital. I have two older brothers who are moderately more attractive, and growing up, they reminded me constantly. I never, ever get enough sleep. I hate the feel of cotton wool, and I think you are the prettiest woman I've ever seen in my entire life. There you go. All there is to know. Please, can I have your phone number? I was as smooth as sandpaper, a pleading fool, even. But Grace's smile widened and my pulse rose. Cardiology, she said. Your heart's in good hands with me. It was a corny line, but it never failed. I unlocked my phone and she typed her number. Before she hit save, she paused, eyes flicking to mine. Promise? I looked her dead in the eye. Promise.
Chapter 6. Grace. Now. That wasn't me. It's the first thing I can think of to say as Henry covers his mouth with his hand, his eyes starting to water. I point to the mess of the toilet. It was like that when I got here. I know what he's thinking. That I've been locked in here for 5 minutes, and I'm protesting far, far too much. And that I probably should see a doctor, because this smell should not be human-made. I think the flush is broken, and I only use the mirror to check my makeup. Henry cranes his neck around the edge of the bathroom door, and I stop talking. Did, he says, through a poorly fought grimace. Did something die in there? Only my dignity. A grey-haired guy in a casual suit squeezes past us, entering the toilet. He wails like he's under attack. Quite the superpower you've got there, Henry says. Jesus Christ! The suited man shouts from behind the door. I'm shriveling, closing my eyes, telling myself to be thankful that I've discovered the perfect Henry repellent. I try to make my escape before this situation gets any worse, but Henry lightly taps me on the arm. Grace, right? He asks. Your friends told me your name. You're the caterer. I nod. He cocks his head to the side and looks at me with undisguised interest, as if he likes me, as if his heart is telling him that this is the beginning of something. Are you always this chatty? He says. I can barely get a word in edgeways. I glance at Sasha in the distance, then back at him. I should walk away. I know I should. Well, I start. Conversation with him feels like a dangerous tightrope leading me over a deadly canyon, but part of me is desperate to see how far I can get across before I fall. I have to ask myself why it is that you want to stand here chatting to the women you think destroyed your toilet. I never said I thought you did this. He swings the plunger around. Why do you think I came prepared? There's a softness to his gaze, a laziness to his smile. He's only had a couple of beers, if I had to guess, but he wasn't drinking at this party before. In the year we were together, I only ever saw him drunk once. Everything is different. I'm changing too much already. I'm in over my head. The suited man leaves the toilet with a hand towel held to his mouth and nose. He claps Henry on the shoulder like he's setting off to war.
Good luck, mate,
he says. It's my chance to run. I should probably... Wait, he says desperately. Can I get you a drink? Henry's courage was one of the things that first drew me to him. That reluctance to waste time. He would see what he wanted and go for it. Now I was cursing him for it.
telling him with my eyes that he didn't want to do this, that I was saving him from a whole lot of pain. I have a boyfriend, I lie. It's not like he'll know. He studies me for a moment. And he hates you being hydrated? I keep my tone neutral. He hates me chatting to strangers who hover outside the lavatory. He laughs, biting his bottom lip. What was once the soundtrack of my happiest days is now a dangerous warning. I like that laugh. So much. Too much. I forcibly remind myself that this isn't the same man I fell in love with. That this Henry hasn't stood outside my restaurant in the pouring rain, night after night, waiting for me to finish work. He's never told me my smile was the most important thing in his world. He hasn't believed in me, beyond all reasonable doubt, even when everything was falling apart. What if I promised to put the plunger away? He drops it to the floor as if it's a weapon, then holds his hands up in surrender. Nope, funny business, I swear. Just a drink to say thanks for all the effort you went to with the food. Oh, it was nothing. Only a few sandwiches, I say. Thank you, though, for offering. I'll be sure to help myself to the bar. Henry begins saying something, but I'm already running over to Sasha, emotions fizzing in my chest. I desperately need some air.
Shall we head out to the garden and sit down? I think I saw some patio chairs out there.
I yell over the music.
Absolutely, Sasha replies. It bloody stinks in here.
I spend the next few hours in the cool air of Henry and Ali's little garden. I can tell it's still early days since Ali moved in, because her green fingers haven't yet had their influence on this space. By spring, she'll have a little herb garden in the corner, a rose bush along the back fence. I think Marcus will be practically living here too by then. But for now, she introduces us to him as her friend, and we all laugh because they are draped all over each other. She's wearing his leather jacket and running her hands through his shaggy hair while they whisper private jokes. It's like they're one drunken suggestion away from a shotgun wedding. Sasha and Ali talk work things while Roman and Marcus make small talk about sports. It's a perfect distraction for what I can now see happening in the dark living room. Henry is sitting on his sofa, chatting to the beautiful redhead again. She taps his chest when he says something to her, twists her hair around her finger. My chest tightens, coiled by an invisible noose. I know a sure thing when I see one. By the time the party winds down, the lamps are lit, illuminating the mess I knew would be there. I keep my brain occupied with the cleanup. Sasha and Roman are still in the garden, deep in a conversation about office politics that I know is going to plant the seeds of Sasha starting her own law firm. So I leave fate to work its magic. There are some bulbs from the past I know I need to rip out of the ground. Others that I can't wait to see in full bloom again. Sasha's career is one of them.
You don't need to do that, Ali tells me as I plunge sticky shot glasses into the soapy sink.
The kitchen door has been shut the whole time. I tell myself I'm enjoying the silence, but really I'm hiding. And definitely not looking at the corner counter. Between the fridge and the microwave, the spot where I had the best sex of my entire life. If I think about that too much, there's little hope of me walking away from Henry Dunn.
I don't mind, I say. I need to clean my trays to take them with me. Might as well get the bulk of it done in the process.
No way am I coming back here to collect them, I've decided. The second I step foot out of that door will be the last time.
Thank you, Ali replies. Really appreciate it.
She looks at the dishes beside me, then peers around the door to the living room where Marcus is passed out on the sofa, drooling. He'll start being sick in about 10 minutes.
Take care of him. I've got this.
She smiles. Thanks, Grace. I owe you one. It's as the kitchen door swings shut behind her that I see a glimpse of something that makes my bones ache. Henry's hand entwined with the stunning redheads. I see them bounce up the stairs laughing. The quiet click of his bedroom door closing sounds to my heart as if someone has sunk a sledgehammer into a wall. Underwater, I curl my hands into fists. They'll be above me now. In Henry's bed, I'm sure. I know by the way the wooden frame creaks. How the loose floorboard on his side of the bed jolts when stepped on. I close my eyes and force myself to ignore the way this makes me feel, as if I'm losing him all over again. Because I'm not. I'm correcting this, fixing my life. I shut my mind off to someone else's lipstick stains on Henry's mouth, and instead picture myself stuck in this new reality, the days rolling by. Eventually, it will be my 30th birthday again, but this time I'll be thriving. I'll be happy. No crying in a packed train station, thank you very much. It's a little while later when Sasha emerges from the garden, Roman swinging the car keys around his index finger.
Ready to go?
He asks. Ready as ever, I reply. They both help me with my empty trays, and we climb into the car. As I sit in the back seat, I sneak a glance at Henry's glowing gold bedroom window and breathe a sigh of relief. It's over. I never have to see him again. History is not going to repeat itself on my watch.
Chapter 7. Henry. 5 years earlier. I saw a whirlwind of red hair, scarlet lips, and white cotton as Naomi sashayed out of her front door and straight into my arms. She looked unbelievably hot, but freezing cold at the same time. Do you need a coat? I said. You look amazing, but it's freezing. And hide this killer dress? She ran her hands over her hips, as if. I opened the passenger door of Ali's little blue polo and Naomi climbed in. A first date. Just not the one I wanted to be on. I'm surprised you agreed to this, Naomi began saying as I made the short drive into Winchester. You looked pretty cozy with that blonde girl when I left Ali's party. I tried to hide my smile. Grace the caterer. 50 attempted draft messages later, and I'd still not written something that wasn't either totally cringy or unimaginably cliched. This was the first time I'd ever second-guessed myself. You up was usually sufficient. I'm happy to be here, I replied. I could think of a few reasons I was, that dress being a major one. But it wasn't exactly the truth. If it hadn't been for Ali's pestering, I'd have spent my first night off in a week collapsed on my sofa with a microwave meal and an Attenborough documentary marathon. It's like you've forgotten how to have fun. All you do is work, eat, and sleep. I'm worried about you, Ali had told me a few days earlier. I do have fun, I replied, a little insulted. Oh, you mean the random hookups you